Am I live? I am live. And Bill's talking about football. He's got to be. I don't even have to hear what you're saying.
I don't know if it's football or not.
Oh, okay. Might call that. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. We're still in Numbers. We'll be all quarter in Numbers. But you get to go through some books that we don't normally go through. This morning I'm in Numbers, and I'm in Deuteronomy, which we don't go into very much at all. So this is about the spies that get sent out. And it's kind of interesting. And if you look at Exodus, you know spies got sent out, but you don't have much detail of it. In Numbers, you got a lot of detail. That's probably a good reason to study it. We're in chapter 13, lucky 13, and this is kind of the first half, and Weldon's going to do the second half next week as far as when they come back. So this is this week about them going out. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send out for yourself men so they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of his father's tribes, everyone a leader among them." So who's talking? God. Yeah, okay. How are they supposed to get it? How are they supposed to get the land? It's going to be given to them. What promise is that from? It's a promise from God. Who did he originally give it to? Abraham. How many of those promises did he give Abraham? Huh? All of them. Oh, that's really good, Wanda. Nice, safe answer, you know? Is the next one going to be none of them? No, there's a specific number of ones that he gave, okay? Less than five, more than one. It was three, okay? He said, "I'm going to make you as many children as there are sands by the sea, as there are stars in the sky. I'm going to give you this land and a big one. Through your seed, all mankind will be blessed." Those are the big three. So this is the one here. They're going to give it to them. What do you think the Israelites thought they had to do? Had to work for it or fight for it, okay? Had to go in and conquer. I mean, they've been around the Egyptians. That was kind of what their example was. I imagine that was, go get it for yourself. Work for it. Do it for yourself. Could they have done that? Not a prayer. Not a prayer. Okay? How does this relate to our salvation? We normally get to these slides at the end, and we normally run out of time. So I put it at the beginning. Not a prayer. How does it relate? We have a prayer. We certainly have a prayer. But as far as doing it ourselves, okay? Can't do it ourselves. It's a gift of God, okay? We can't do it ourselves. There's no way in the world we can do it ourselves. It's a gift of God, okay? We can't work for it. We can't earn it. What else did I say? Our faith is the path, but our faith doesn't earn it for us, does it? Our heart is what precedes us to God, and the faith that we have in God, he'll do what he says he'll do, but it's still a gift. Sometimes we get stuck just like they got stuck. We can't do it. Sometimes you get dismayed saying, okay, the world's just too big and I'm just too big a sinner. And we understand it's a gift of God. Doesn't have that much to do with how much is against it when God's for it. Right? And I think that's what kind of this lesson is. And I said, maybe we are a little bit too hard on the Israelites because we're not looking at it from a standpoint to say, sometimes we get stuck in the same rut. Okay. Deuteronomy. Said I was going to go there. They got some great names in here, so if somebody wants to read for me, it's in about two slides. I know you're dying to, aren't you? Then we set out for Horeb and went through all that day in terrible wilderness which you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites, just as the Lord our God had commanded us. We came to Kadesh Barnea. I said to you, you have come to the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is about to give us. See, the Lord your God has placed the land before you. Go up, take possession. As the Lord, the God of your fathers, has spoken to you, do not fear or be dismayed. So whose perspective, whose perspective is this person talking from? The last one in Numbers was God's. This is from man. And which man? Moses. Yeah, this is Moses talking. Okay, so Deuteronomy is written from his perspective more than it is from the Lord's perspective. Numbers is written a lot more from the Lord's perspective. But it gives you the same situation from two different perspectives, right? Whose perspective was the recounting of the Israelites that they came to the land of Canaan? Yeah. What was Moses' expectation on when they were going to take it? Now. Okay, you kind of look at it, it says they're going to go in, it's going to be theirs, it's going to be now. That was his expectation. And the reason that's in italics is because it's the same words, but I had more questions, so I ran out of space. What did he encourage them with when Moses sent them out? Do not fear.
Remember what God has done all the countries.
Yeah. He didn't say that there. He said he should have remembered it, but he said, don't be afraid. And don't be dismayed. If God's with you, who's against you? Nobody can stand up to you. Nobody. Why? I think we just answered that, didn't we? But the reason he encouraged in that way is, how strong is their faith at this point? It's either weak or no faith. It's somewhere between weak and no faith. It's bad. It's really, really, really bad, okay? And there's, I got to use the word, the frailty of their psyche. Okay, their mind is stuck in very temporal sense. Okay, what I see, what I can do, and that's it. Okay. They don't know God very well, no. But they got to drink out of a fire hose since they came out of Egypt. Oh yeah. They probably got their idols they brought out of Egypt when they did, even though all the 10 plagues addressed idolatry in themselves. What I can do is where a lot of their faith is, and a lot not farther than that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Things that God has done for us now.
What's the term we use?
Those trials and tribulations come, we just lose all our mind, seems like.
It seems like we forget it. It's kind of like, we got a phrase for it. What have you done for me lately? Okay? They're kind of like, what have you done for lately, God? And you see that all the way through the Old Testament. In Judges, particularly. The Judges, they get reclaimed. They go, well, this is really great, never mind that. And then they go off again. And then they have to have another judge to bring them back. And then they just go through that cycle over and over and over again. And again, as you said, that's a warning to us. Not to be in the mindset of saying, what have you done for me lately? Who would tempt them to become afraid, dismayed? This isn't hard. Satan, yeah. Who tempts us when we become afraid? Same thing, okay. As they say, same old, same old. So back into Numbers. You sure you don't want to read? This is the good slide. This is the good slide. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran at the command of the Lord, all the men who were heads of the sons of Israel. These were their names: from the tribe of Reuben, Shemarah, the son of Zachor; from the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gedeel, the son of Sodi; from the tribe of Joseph; from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Sushi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali; from the tribe of Asher, Sether, the son of Michael; and from the tribe of Naphtali, Nahbi, the son of Vophsi; the tribe of Gad, Gerul, the son of Machi. So, who looks like they're missing? Huh?
You read those one more time for us.
One more time? Hold on to that. Who seems to be missing? Joshua. Kind of seems like he's missing. What'd you say? Moses, you looked ahead. You looked ahead. I thought this was, even after being in Egypt for, actually that's 400 years, what did they retain? I made it similar. Their genealogy. I kind of thought that was amazing. They've been there for 400 years and they had maintained their genealogy. They know who was begat by who was begat by who was begat by who. And kept it all that time. I thought that was amazing. Back into Deuteronomy. Then all of you approached me and said, "Let us send a man before us that they may search out the land for us and bring back to us word of the way by which we should go up and the cities which we shall enter." The thing pleased me, and I took 12 of your men, one man for each tribe. So this is, again, in Deuteronomy, Moses is recounting what happened. Numbers is kind of a real-time description as it's happening. So that's kind of the difference between the two books. What was the purpose here identified? We're ahead of schedule, so I can wait. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's information gathering, really. Which city should we go up to enter? These are the names of the men who Moses sent by spy at the land, but Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua, which is what you just mentioned earlier. What was Joshua's actual name? Hoshea, okay. Does this mean anything? Did he rename any of the others? Not that we know of. And Moses is pretty dutiful about writing down what he was going to write down. I just kind of wondered, does this kind of indicate there's maybe a special relationship either has started or is going to start or has already started between Moses and Joshua? Yeah. It was a different name, but this is where Moses renamed the guy and gave him a different name. So I don't know whether to take your money and place it wherever you want to go. It could be that he did just rename him because he couldn't say Hoshea very well, or it confused people, or it could be because there was a relationship. I don't know, but there was, you could kind of see, and I'm looking at it from a hindsight perspective to say, where was Joshua when they came out of the wanderings? Well, Joshua was one of the, he was the leader at that particular time. So I don't know whether at that particular time Moses was looking and saying, this is the guy I'm going to mentor. This is the guy I'm going to start to develop to lead the people with me. That I see something in him I like. I don't know. I just kind of guessed.
But the Lord also changed the name from Saul.
To Paul. Simon Peter, that's true. It says right here, it says, but Moses called Hoshea the son of Nun Joshua. It was Moses that renamed him. If Moses was pretty good about writing down what God told him, and if it did, he didn't write it down here, this is probably Moses. That's my opinion for what it's worth. It could have been Hoshea was a very, very typical Egyptian name. And he said, I'm not going to have one of the leaders that's here with an Egyptian name. I'm going to give him a Jewish name. I don't know. He could call him Josh. You know, that sounds a lot better than Hush. Okay. Numbers, when Moses sent them to spy out the land of the Canaan, he said to them, go up there into Negev, then go up into the hill country. So he sent them to some specific spots to go into. Did he send them into all of what would be Israel? Nah. That's a big area. So where's Negev? Negev. Not Negev, Negev. Is it the what? Northern part. No. No. It's in the south. It's in a circle. Circle is Israel as it goes down into Egypt. So you can kind of see they wandered, they came out, they went south of where the circle is, and then they came around into what's his present day Jordan, and then they went west into Israel. So they were on foot, but in shoes that didn't wear out. Okay, so they're just in the southern part of Israel. Well, today it's a dry desert. The earth has been warming since the Ice Age. It was a whole lot cooler then in that region. And there's a reason I'm going to get to that in a minute, but this region was not a dry desert area. How is it described in Israel? A land flowing with milk and honey. Okay. Would you describe Israel as a land flowing with milk and honey today? No, no. It's a whole lot warmer than it was back then, 3,000-4,000 years ago. See what the land is like and whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many. How is the land in which they live? Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? How is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort then to get some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. In other words, harvest season. What information were they supposed to bring back? Huh? Oh. You can get wrong real well with Wanda. You could have said all of that, too. That would have gone along with what she said earlier. You guys are fun this morning. Can you be a little more specific? They have trees. Land of plenty. Yep. Strong cities, weak cities. What else? Bring back some of the fruit? Okay. The land's good or bad? The people are weak or strong? We get to big in a minute. Okay? I picked out six items that he sent them. He says, this is what you go find out. I thought it was interesting. What are most of the questions about? The land. Four out of six are asking about what's the land like? What is it like in there? Two of them are about people, the cities they built, and how strong are they? But four of them are about the land. What's it like? Is it a land flowing with milk and honey? Probably is what's behind his request. Is it like God described it? Did God talk about the people? When he talked to him, when he talked to Abraham, I'm going to send you to a city, to a land that's got people with big people and big cities. No. He says, I'm going to send you a land flowing with milk and honey. Okay, so most of the questions were about land. What was it like? So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rahab at Lebo Hamath. When they had gone up to Negev, they came to Hebron, where Haiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were. So we have three different people that were kind of all swirled around a fourth, don't we? Who are they descendants of? Huh? Anak, okay. Okay, these are the people, but they're all descendants of the fourth one, as far as relationships. Does that mean anything? They got some more information, but they did find out some things the second time, but they saw something about the people that were there when they spied it that they didn't expect. Any of these particularly noteworthy? They were big, okay. Anak, particularly the word that we use for that one. So let's look in Deuteronomy what it talks about there, because it talks about it in chapters 2 and 3, and I'm going to go touch into those, and I don't want to confuse you, but chapter 1 in Deuteronomy is about when they first visited, and chapters 2 and 3 talks about when they came back. But it does give you a little bit more information about that. The Emim lived there formerly a people as great, numerous, and as tall as Anakim. Like the Anakim, they also regarded as Rephaim, but the Moabites called them Emim. Descendants of Anak were also called Anakim. Two different names. What were they all referred to as? Huh? Well, Emim by the Moabites, but they were regarded as Rephaim. Rephaim. How are they described here? And you're going to get more into this next week. But how are they described here? Great, numerous, and tall. Tall and great. Great and tall. Let's go a little bit more. Chapter 3, and this gives you a metric. I've been working metrics in my company this last week, so I figured this was a great verse for metrics. Thus we took the land at the time from the hand of the two kings of the Amorites, who were beyond the Jordan, from the valley of Arnon to Mount Hermon. Sidonians called Hermon Siron, and the Amorites called it Seir. All the cities of the plateau and all Gilead and all Bashan, as far as Salcah and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og and Bashan,
For only Og, the king of Bashan, was left of the remnant of the Rephaim. Behold, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. It is in Rabbath of the sons of Ammon. Its length was 9 cubits, and its width 4 cubits by ordinary cubit.
King-size bed. Oh, is that a pun? That was a really good pun. Since it was the king's bed, it was a king-size bed. I like that. Did you have razor blade soup? Because you're really sharp this morning. 18 inches. He's a big guy. He's a, kind of a wide guy, too, if he needs 4 cubits. Although I'm probably getting into the category where I need 4 cubits myself. So what's the time frame in this passage? I just explained that, but when is this occurring? This is after the wandering. This is after the 40 years of wandering. This is taken from chapters 2 and 3 in Deuteronomy is after they had taken the land, and chapter 1 is before they took the land. It goes real fast in Deuteronomy. Because thus we took the land. Since it's past tense, this particular passage here is they've taken the land already. But you already did some of the math for me. How big is his bed? And don't say it's really big. King size. Huh? 13 and a half feet. Somebody did the math. It's about 13 and a half feet. That's a big bed. That gives you, that's the metric that I was going for, was to say these people were probably 12 plus feet tall. I'm 6 feet. So he's twice my height. That's a big guy.
I'm an old basketball coach. I just got thinking.
Wouldn't you love to have a team full of them?
That's about the size of the free throw line.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to the line. About 12 feet. I mean, he obviously wasn't 13 and a half feet tall because you always want a little bit of wiggle room on either side of the bed. But he was at least 12 feet. That's a big, big person. And had they ever seen anybody like that when they were in Egypt? No. They never saw anybody like that. So you can, huh? They weren't 12 feet tall. I imagine they were comparable as far as height. They weren't king size. They were regular size. The queen size? That's true. That's true. Could be. We could go with that one and just... Well, at least we're all in the same bed, right? There you go. Nice pun. So, they spied some pretty big people when they were there. And it was in that region that these particular people were. I don't know if they were... I don't think they were up north. And if they'd have gone up north, it might have been a different report, but they went south. Do you think? I mean, it was a test of their faith. And as we said, it was extremely weak at this particular time because they went in there and they're thinking, we got 1 million people, but we've got shovels and maybe some hoes and maybe some pitchforks, and these guys are 12 feet tall. He could swing a stick and knock me into the next county. They're thinking wrong. You don't have to swing anything. But you can kind of understand them a little bit. So back to Numbers. And went back 40 years now. So we're back on track again. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol. And from there cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes. And they carried it on a pole between two men, with some of the pomegranates and the figs. The place was called the Valley of Eshcol, because of the cluster which the sons of Israel cut down from there. How fertile is the land? very fertile. You've been learning from her. I said, substantiate why it's so fertile. What makes you think it's so fertile? Land flow and mickle. Yeah, yeah. How big is a cluster of grapes? You take off a grapevine? Maybe hang down about like this. Okay, I can carry it around with one hand. Okay. How'd they carry this one back? One cluster of grapes. Between two men and a pole. That's huge. Unbelievably large, okay? One cluster of grapes and two guys. Now, they threw the figs and the pomegranates on there, and that added a little bit more weight, but it seems like the focus here is to say, this wasn't a land that was pretty good. This is a land that produces produce that's unbelievable, incredible, the amount of produce. And what's it like there? Where do we grow grapes today? Like mid to northeastern California, right? What's it like there? Wet? Fertile? Somewhat warm. Kind of cool up there in the northern part of California. It gets cool. And they don't get grapes that two guys have to carry. But this was unbelievable. What they saw as far as the produce was staggering as far as how fertile it was. But the people they saw was kind of staggering for them too. Yeah. He couldn't get in that door. He could change the clock. They turned and went up into the hill country. This is the same recounting of the same thing, but it's in Deuteronomy in first chapter. They turned and went up to the hill country and came to the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. Then they took some of the fruit of the land in their hands and they brought it down to us, and they brought it back a report and said, "It is a good land which the Lord our God is about to give us." Started out really good. If you read the next part of it, and Wanda probably is in Deuteronomy, you'll find out what Weldon's going to talk about next week. Because the first thing out of their mouth sounded pretty good. What does it seem like the report's going to be? At this particular point, it says, let's go! Let's get it! Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's talking here that Moses is recounting. Because Moses, like I said, he's recounting in Deuteronomy. Numbers is written from a perspective to say, here it is as we go along. Deuteronomy is written up from a perspective to say, okay, we've gone into the land of Canaan and we've conquered it. And it's a look back perspective in Deuteronomy. It's a totally different perspective that it's written. So who do you think said this? Joshua and Caleb probably said this. It doesn't say who it is, but in the next lesson that we're going to have, it's going to get into more of the details of just where their mindset was of all the spies. But the lesson kind of for us is to say, don't forget who's on your side. Don't forget who's going to fight those battles for you. And don't forget it's a gift. You can't earn it. Questions, comments? This is a short lesson.
Well, it's remarkable when he sent them out to the land, he did not want to leave them.
It's true.
So each of them is really giving their own perspective of what they see. And so that's what the way of people context it. It wasn't until they did the battle for it that Joshua and Caleb disagreed with
them. That's true. It was 12 guys. Yeah, it was 12 chiefs and no Indians. And I imagine there was probably a little bit of friction as they went up there, but maybe not. Once they got in the land and you saw that, it probably it may have tended to kind of mold them together to say, we need to stay as a cohesive unit, at least till we get out of here. Yeah. To come back to tell Moses to give him the report. Twelve spies, yeah. But it was kind of interesting. Like I said, it still did strike me to the point where to say they did maintain their genealogy to know what the 12 tribes were, who was in the 12 tribes, and then that they had leaders that they had stayed, if you will, compartmentalized to say, we have these different tribes, we will stay within these tribes to some extent. I imagine they married some Egyptians too, but they knew that. No, that's true. Yeah, yeah. But for 400 years to maintain that identity back to the 12 tribes that came, actually the Manasseh and Ephraim were sons of Joseph. So there was no tribe of Joseph per se. But it was interesting that they maintained that cohesiveness for 400 years. It could come out and still elect, and still have leaders of their 12 tribes. God was in charge. He's in charge, but sometimes we don't listen to him. Any other comments? I'll let you go early. Thank you.
Thank you. old heard about Cal Griner breaking his neck. Cal Griner broke his neck.
Broke his neck?
Yes. I assume in the fall.